My name is Clint. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome you if you're new here tonight. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. They really mean it about the steps here, which has got to be kind of bad news in a way. You know, at first it seems like bad news. It's sort of like, come on. Why would you want to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand God? It is such a weird thing to think about doing. Why would you want to make amends to people that have caused you to hurt them? I mean, seeking through prayer and meditation to improve your conscious contact with God. That really gets you, huh? That's all just so much conversation. I mean, it's just kind of what they've done to placate the priests in those Catholic churches where we have our AA meetings in the basement. That's just thrown in to throw them off. That doesn't have anything to do with the real world. Why would you want to make a list of people you've harmed? Oh, God. What if somebody came across that list? I looked at those steps on the wall in the club in Glendale when I was new. They had them all around the wall. And I knew a couple of things. I knew that those steps were not really anything that anybody got excited. In fact, it's a little embarrassing to see somebody get too excited about that. It's not cool. Somebody get involved in an overkill about these steps, you know. Come on. Lighten up. Are you kidding me? And there is something that drives us in the direction of doing something because we feel so bad about the condition that we're in. I don't mean about the drunken condition that we're in. I don't mean about the zonked out condition that we're in. I don't mean about the jail condition that we're in, or the probation, or the trouble with our families and our creditors and stuff like that when we get here. All of that is just part of the scar tissue that people pick up. That's just the natural, inevitable result of being a pig. Whatever you're a pig about. And then there comes a time in our lives when, and we can't really quite believe it, when all that stuff, the chemicals, stop working. And it's pretty clear for most of us that the chemicals have to stop working before we would ever come here and stay here. And we have that odd feeling, that disillusionment that, you know, there's so much promise to booze and pills when we start. God, they just seem like, that's so wonderful. There's something, people might let me down. I can't really trust anybody, but I've got my booze. I've got my Valium. I've got my Speed. I've got whatever it is, pot. And one day you get the awful feeling that it's you've run across a bad batch of whatever it is. That is bad news, boy. I sat in a beer bar one morning from 6 until about 10 a.m. and finally concluded the guy was giving me near beer. That is just frightening. And I was heading out to get a real drink when I got arrested. I wasn't drunk. It was a big mistake. I couldn't believe that guy. The light was red. I stopped. And the light turned green. And amber and red and green. I was resting. See, the beer was working, but it really hadn't gotten up here much in my head where I needed it to work. It was just sort of working every place else. And there was a car right behind me, happened to be a Glendale police car. And he came up and got me out of the car, arrested me. But when I got here a few months later, and then a bail bondsman brought me to AA, and I sat around those meetings in Glendale and looked at the steps on the wall and heard them read as I heard them read tonight, I thought, first of all, they're not that much different than the things I heard in church as a little boy, and we all know that those things don't work. Not really. Not really. My mother took us to church 4 and 5 times a week, and we were told to give our hearts to Jesus. And those people that had done that or said they had done that didn't seem real pleased with the process. My uncle did that. He went down front and got saved, and they pretty soon they sent his ass to China to be a missionary. And not me, pal. He seemed like such a... God, why would anybody do that? China. Tell the Chinese about God. And I thought he liked it. You know, it's funny, I went down to Austin to visit him a couple of months ago and had him up here in my home. He turns out to be the most wonderful human being in the world, and I was always so afraid of him. I asked him if he liked being a missionary in China. He said, no, not very. Kevin met him. He said he wasn't good with language, and he's supposed to learn some obscure Chinese dialect. And in this dialect, as it turns out, there's a paper-thin difference between Jesus Christ our Lord and Jesus Christ the pig. You know? That's what he said. I don't know. And it was just, you know, just a little. He was close. He felt so bad. He said, I told him about Jesus Christ the pig for 4 years, and then I came home. Made me feel better about the guy, you know. It wasn't that he wanted it that way, it's just... And you know why he went there? He didn't want to be a preacher, and he knew he was supposed to be a preacher, and he hated preachers, and he figured if he went over there, God would get off his case. So he went and did 4 years there, and then he had to come back and still be a preacher, which is what he should have been all along, instead of telling him about all that stuff. Well, I don't know why I'm telling you my uncle's story. He's not even... alcoholic, poor devil. My mother used to say, have you found God yet? I don't want to find God. I understand he's a little annoyed with me. Where will you spend eternity? She'd say, where will you spend eternity? I knew the answer to that one. You're going to burn forever. That's tough. Tell a kid that. God, 10,000 years maybe, but forever. What will you do when you meet your maker? I don't know. Apologize, I guess. Hey, I didn't know the answers to those questions, and you didn't get cute with my mother. She seemed to ask him when she had a stick or something in her hand, you know. My dad'd say, "When are you going to be a man?"
I don't know.
I got baptized in the Yellowstone River outside of Billings, Montana, early one spring. Yeah. I didn't find God that day, I'll tell you. I didn't find very much rain for about 3 days, is how it went. But, yeah. I'm not sure I ever fully recovered from that. Oh, I've had my moments. My mom wanted me to be an evangelist. Wanted me to go to Prairie Bible Institute in Western Canada and become an evangelist. And I knew there was no way. Of course, in those days, I had no idea the depth of the work those people did. It was not clear to me that that it was not just preaching, that they had plenty of other activities that they got involved in. But we've learned that recently. I may have more of a gift for that than I thought. It kind of gives you a new meaning to the term Sermon on the Mount, if you really think through that. Well, I mean, if you really, you know what happens if you do what they want you to do in church? You find yourself on a street corner in Billings, Montana, handing out religious tracts to passers-by. That is bad business. That is humiliating. That is demeaning. That is intrusive. There are a lot of things about that that I have a real objection to, and I've done it. And it didn't make me feel good. And I refused to do it, and that didn't make me feel good. There's nothing about all of that that made me feel good. We learned, for example, that anything I wanted, really wanted, was not available to me. It was real hard to get, and it took a long time to get it. I learned that God was not available to me. I had to... He's all the things that I learned about God, like he's all-powerful and all-knowing and all-caring and all-loving, and you pray for things and it doesn't happen. And so after a while you just say, pass. And if you could just let it go at that, it'd be great, I think. And you can't quite do that either. And so you just push it way over here, and somebody someday, sooner or later, for all of us, has come along with a drink or a pill or a marijuana cigarette, something that gave us chemical peace of mind, and we could kind of momentarily forget all of it and pretend it didn't matter and pretend that we had no investment in whether or not there was a God or who he was. And we did it as long as we could do it. And we've got our noses rubbed in it for as long as we could stand, and woke up one day with the awful knowledge that not only were we out of God, but we were out of booze. We were out of anything that would closely resemble peace of mind. And then there is that awful suspicion right behind it that all we ever wanted was peace of mind. That's all we ever wanted. That's what it all was about. And we rejected their version of peace of mind because it wasn't going to work for us. And the one that we had found didn't last long enough for us to get through this lifetime. And we find ourselves at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the hideous part about it is that there seems to be just there's the fellowship and this laughter and this sense of being in a group where we can belong and say things that we've never said out loud to anybody else, and where people tend to laugh at the same things that we think are funny and cry at the things that touch us so deeply. And we can go every day if we want, and whether we're broke or whether we're not. And that's great, except that right under that, this business about God keeps coming up. It's just kind of there. And sometimes somebody mentions it from the podium, and sometimes they don't, but at every meeting that you go to, you read these steps, you hear them read, that's part of the what's going on around here, and you're reminded again and again and again that you have some unfinished business in your life. And how on earth are you going to handle that? And my approach to it is just to ignore it. I mean, that's nice. These people are well-meaning. I'm glad that they have something like this. And I really am quite sure that these steps seem to work for them. And I would like to try them myself, except that it's been my experience that what works for most people doesn't really work for me. And if I tried these steps and they didn't work for me, and I know they won't, what the hell am I going to do then? It's really better this side of trying the steps, because at least I don't have that ultimate disappointment to live with. And I walk around then, and people say, "How are you?" And I say, "Fine, thanks." "No, really, fine." "Yeah, I'm fine, thanks." But there is a knot in my gut, and every once in a while somebody says, "Yeah, how's the knot in your gut doing?" "Fine." "It's a good knot." "One of the finest I've ever had." And what are you going to do with that? And you know what? Around here, in a meeting like this, or up in the Pacific Group, or any number of vital meetings around the city, you can get into the middle of it. You can get going good on AA activity. And it's important. I cut my eye teeth on it. And there's always something to do. And it's easy to sponsor people that way. You throw them on the AA merry-go-round. And as they come around your way, "Call me." And it's great. I'm not putting that down at all. I've moved many, many people. I've gone on a lot of moves and played a lot of softball. And I think it's great. And the people that I sponsor now do that too. And it's terrific. It really, I got sober in Glendale, and that doesn't happen there, and I moved out the west end of town, and it does happen there, and I like it. And if you're doing that, please don't think I am putting it down, because I am not. And if that were going to get the job done, I would just use a different theme for my talk tonight. I mean, if that's really where it ended, it would be great. But sooner or later, we kind of have to say, why am I avoiding these steps? And usually we come up with the answer, if we're really looking at it, I'm afraid they won't work for me. I really am afraid that they won't work for me. And the reason I'm afraid they won't, well, I know they work for you, but you see, they're not new. This is not new stuff. This stuff is familiar to me. This stuff I grew up with. I know all about an inventory. It's like confession or examination of conscience or witnessing in some religions. Meditation is not new. There is a scriptural reference for every step in the book. Wilson did not invent this stuff. and it's familiar. And because it's familiar, we get the feeling that I've tried it. And we've never tried it, but we think that we have. And so, it's the same with step three. Me make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand God, I got a problem. My understanding of God is going to get in my way. I ask guys, where did you hear about God? And they tell me, the church or at home, some of them much later in life. How did you like the place where you heard? I didn't like it. Didn't want to be there. Who told you about God? And they tell you, how'd you feel about that person? I didn't like him. And after a while, you know, I talked to a guy one night. He was really interesting. We were doing some stuff together about the steps, and he said that he learned about God when he was a little kid. He grew up in a Catholic home, and he learned about God because the priest, the parish priest, would be there on the couch in the morning when he woke up and came out in the living room. The priest would be, his father would have gone out and rescued the priest from whatever bar he was in, and he'd be sleeping out there. And the guy was shocked to see the priest in his boxer shorts. Didn't think God's representative ought to be wearing boxer shorts, I guess. I don't quite know what it was. It got him annoyed. He thought God had a crappy personnel department or something like that. And he thought that was God, or that God had some, you know. And I said, I can see how it'd be a little difficult for you to turn your will and your life over to care of something like that. And I ask him, where is God? And you get three answers, one of three answers. He's either in heaven, which is a lot of separation, or he's everywhere, which means you can't get by with a damn thing. And sometimes somebody says, he's inside here, he's in me. Which I think is a good thing to have it. If you can have it that way, it's not bad. Because it means that you're kind of worthy to be the host or something like that. It's like I can't be all that bad if God is also in me. But it still gives you a sense of, man, I don't know. Where the hell, what would I turn my will and my life? That is just a little bit too much booga booga stuff to me, if you don't mind. You know, that's just too weird for me. It doesn't work. Because what you got to do is you got to get out there and really hammer. You got to be a little slicker. You got to be a little brighter. You got to be a little faster. You got to really do it. And I don't think I want to do that. Besides, we all have a notion of what God's going to do to us if we really turned our will and our life. And my notion was, of course, that he would make me go to China to be a missionary. And we have one wonderful advantage, and that is that we are in a group where we can watch people who refuse to take these steps go get drunk once in a while. And when they start coming back looking better than when they left, I'll get interested in that. They never do. They never look better, and they don't feel better. And so we begin, then we start toward those steps again. Oh, I don't know. I'm just going to hang on here. I'm not going to really, I don't want to do that. All right, I'll tell you what. I'll write an inventory. I'll do that. You know how long it takes to write an inventory? We make it a big deal. A big deal. You know how long it takes? It takes 2 years and an evening to write an inventory. 18 months in an afternoon, and you get it done. And then we finally sit down with somebody we hope is about the easiest shot in the group. I'll tell them part of this and see how it goes. I'm not going to tell them all of it. Are you kidding? And then we find ourselves telling it to them, all of it, because the reaction to the stuff that we put out there as a test pattern isn't bad. Maybe by this time we've learned how to play that game. It's great. You get a sponsor, and you call them up every once in a while, and you say, hey, I got a problem. Because you know you're supposed to take your problems to your sponsor. He says, yes. Should I wear my blue tie or my yellow tie today? I can't decide. says, "Where are you born?" "Oh, thank you, oh God, that's so wonderful." You don't mention that you're 3 months behind on the rent and about to get evicted, because that would not be cool. And he might tell you to get a job, and we don't really want to go that far. I went to my sponsor with a problem one time. I really didn't think he'd parlay it as far as he did. I said, "I hate my ex-wife. God, I can't stand that woman." He said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Do you want to change that?" I said, "Sure." I didn't. I kind of liked hating her. But when your sponsor says that, you say, "Sure. I wouldn't have bothered you otherwise." He said, "If you want to change how you feel about her, change how you treat her." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "How's the child support coming?" "Well, I'm going to get to that." He said, "Yeah, you are, or you're going to get another sponsor. Pretty soon I'm paying child support every 2 weeks like I'm supposed to." I had no idea. You got to be careful. When you take even a serious problem can get parlayed into having you grow if you're not careful. Things will get better, and there's almost nothing you can do about it. And it isn't easy because it's unfamiliar. But what the hell are we going to do about God? I pray, nothing happens. I'm really not anybody that he's going to be much interested in. Oh, I know, I couldn't get sober alone. And I got to believe that there must have been some kind of a divine intervention in that. I've been sober now 90 days, and I know that's not my deal. I've been sober 2 years, and there's no way. So I know there's a God. And I guess in the abstract, he wants people to be sober instead of drunk. And I don't know how long this is going to last. And I just think if I tiptoe around these meetings and don't cause too much trouble, maybe he won't notice me. Maybe I won't get struck drunk. Maybe I'll be all right if I don't make too many mistakes. And you know, it's interesting because it isn't the things that we do that get us drunk anyway. It's the things that we refuse to do, like the steps. And so we come back full circle and we say, "What the hell am I going to do with this?" I don't really know. There's a line in one of John Denver's songs. It's an interesting line. I don't remember the words except for this one phrase. He says, "And listen to God's casual reply." We think that the reply should be as energetic as our sniveling, I guess. "Oh God, help me. Help me get sober." He says, "Okay." "No, I need it. Help me get sober." "Okay. Bring your black hole on. Bring your body." "All right, you can have her." "Take her away, dude." I used to say, "Why don't I get a vote?" And they say, "You got to vote. You already voted. Your life is exactly the way you voted it yesterday." Exactly. But I want to blame God for all of that business. And yet I couldn't deny the fact, and I remember very clearly, 9 months sober on the Palisades in Santa Monica with my little kid, who I was now allowed to see unescorted, crying. I had tears in my eyes. It just occurred to me I hadn't had a drink in 9 months. I'm holding his hand. He says, "How come you're crying, Daddy?" And I don't remember what I said to him, but I was glad to be with him that day. I was glad to be sober that day. I was glad to be a member of the human race and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that day. And I had a sense, just a sense, that it was God's grace. Just a sense. And then I'm on doing my thing, and I don't want to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, because I don't want to go to China. And I had that feeling. If I ever let my guard down, I'm in trouble. And then I began to know that my life was not working, and I was 3 years sober. And And I was having difficulty everywhere I turned. Relationships were not good. My job was not good. My money was not good. I was having an awful time. And I knew, because I was estranged from everybody here, I couldn't talk to my sponsor. I went on the moves and I did the stuff in the group and I did it all. And it wasn't quite getting the job done. And I knew that I'd better start getting ready for the streets. And I wrote an inventory and I took a fifth step and I, out of despair, really, I said, all right, I'll go to China. I'll go to China. It was really a surrender, a conscious one. And you know what? He doesn't want me in China. He wants me to stay in town and pay child support, is what he seems to have in mind. And so I did that. And some interesting stuff came out of it, like some peace. Some peace. A sense of, maybe I don't have to run. The same sense that came out of the when they made me list my phone number and my right name, it's another part of the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. When they told me that, and out of that came the fact that my two oldest sons got in touch with me. I didn't go find them and make amends. They got in touch with me shortly after my phone was listed. And we had a talk and spent a couple of days together. And they were young. They were 8 and 11. And then I had to take care of the support for those kids. And I moved on a little bit more, and I was 5 years sober, and I didn't like my job, and I was sniveling about that one day. And sometimes when somebody tells you to do something and you know you don't want to do it and you know you have to do it, there is a surrender involved in just going ahead and doing it. And so I said to this guy, all right, I'll look into going to law school. And I reported back to him. And I started that fall. And sometimes you have to be willing to have it go either way. Because I didn't want to start and fall on my butt. I didn't want to start and flunk out. I didn't want to start and find out I didn't like it or was had no capacity for it or was... And you have to be willing to have it go either way. I mean, that's really the essence of turning your will and your life over to the care of God. And that's the way that it is. The other day, I took something back to a store that wasn't working, and I was all ready to get worked up if they didn't refund my money. A couple hundred bucks, and I was already mad when I walked in there. And I remembered, why don't you, is it okay either way, really? And I surrendered and said, it's all right, either way. I'm willing to have it go either way. If they don't give me a refund on it, it's easy. I just don't trade there anymore, you know. But I don't have to kick the windows out. I don't have to bring a lawsuit. And it was like that. It's been like that many times. And I started law school with all the risks that were involved. And they were substantial. And 4 years later, I finished. And I do that for a living now, and it's an exciting thing for me to do. And every time I go into a trial, I go in there ready, but I had better know that it could go either way. And I'd better be prepared to be cool when it looks like it's going the other way, when those harpoons are going in there. Because ultimately, I don't run any of it. And I want the control so much. And God's replies seem to be casual. And there is a part of me that is this, that there, you know, it's an interesting thing to get the notion that we really can live like that. That there is a spiritual part available, and it's the most important and interesting part of our entire lives. How many times when you were drinking did it seem to you that if you just had the relationship and the right house and the right job, you wouldn't have to drink so much. And then the worst thing that can happen is you get the right relationship and the right house and the right job, and you go, oh my God, I still have to drink. I mean, it's like Peggy Lee said, is that all there is? And we've all asked that question, is that it? Is that all there is? I've got all my emotional needs met and my physical needs met and my intellectual needs met, and you mean that I still have to drink? Oh, Jesus. How will I explain this when I've been telling them all that this will fix it? And it suggests that there's a whole bundle of needs I haven't even looked at yet. And since they're attached to my spirit, I'll call them spiritual needs. Chamberlain used to say that every one of us, sooner or later, we all have to come back home to the living God that made us. And I guess that's true. I guess that's true. I've been sober 23 and a half years, and I have gone through every phase that is possible to go through, and I resisted these steps as long as I could resist them. I resisted turning my will and my life over to the care of God. I didn't even come close to trying to establish any kind of a conscious contact with God, as it suggests in the 11th step, for years, and found out that there's a half-life available to every one of us. And there's also something that's said in Alcoholics Anonymous, half measures avail us nothing, that there really is so much here that we have stumbled into something so incredibly exciting, that there is something here that, and you know that it's here. You cannot sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and not know that God's grace is in operation here. And there is a time when we all have to say, you know what? I learned long ago not to take any chances. I learned long ago not to build up my expectations. I learned long ago that anything I really want takes a long time and it's real hard to get. And yet that doesn't fit with our experience. And still we know. If I ever really wanted to have God in my life, I'd have to turn into somebody weird. I'd have to do weird stuff and alienate everybody. It couldn't be just as simple as taking off my pack. And yet, oddly enough, that's all it is. He holds me in the hollow of his hand, and I can't fall out. I can crawl out, but I can't fall out. The biggest victories I've had in AA have just been letting go, mostly of old ideas. And there have been a lot of them. And sometimes we hold on to those so tightly we don't even know it's an old idea. We just think it's the way life is. And it isn't up for grabs anymore. I knew you can't trust women. I just knew that. Knew that. Let go of your old ideas. Okay, I will. What about not trusting women? That's not an old idea. They're just untrustworthy. Can you imagine what that did to relationships? Never turn your will and your life over to the care of God. He's going to make you do something weird. Well, that's an old idea. What about another idea? Like, you know what? My life would be infinitely better if I turned my will and my life over to the care of God. Just as an experimental idea. And you know what you do when you do that? You have fun practicing law or whatever you want to do. We all got to find something to do between meetings. Might as well make it a game worth playing. You need to enhance a relationship to really pray for that person? To really be willing to know that I can go first class and all I have to do is keep that one relationship straight, mine with my Maker? If my mother were here tonight, I still think she'd say to me what she always did. What will you do when you meet your Maker? What will you do when you meet your Maker? And I used to think, what would I do? Well, I guess I'll tell him I got sobered up and paid the money back. And you know, there is an answer to that question today for me that I like very much. If she were here tonight and say, what would you do when you meet your Maker? I can say, Mama, we already met. I meet him every day.
I met him in Glendale in 1966. Those guys introduced us. And gradually over the years, he's been there so much for me that I somehow or other have been able, in spite of my best judgment, to slowly and gradually become willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. And you know what? After all of that, it's the easiest life there is. Welcome.